And tonight on Coast to Coast, we are going through the eyes of a scientist look for proof of God. Bernard Heisch with us. It's an amazing story. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. Dr. Bernard Heisch is a astrophysicist, author of more than 130 scientific publications. He has served as a scientific editor of the Astrophysical Journal for at least 10 years, was the principal investigator on several NASA research projects. His professional positions include staff scientist at the Lockheed Martin Solar and Astrophysics Laboratory and deputy director of the Center for Extreme Ultraviolet Astrophysics at the University of California in Berkeley. In addition, he was also the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Scientific Exploration. A couple of his works include The God Theory, which he was on with us a couple of years ago, and his latest, Proof of God, The Shocking True Answer to the World's Most Important Question. Dr. Bernard Heisch back on Coast to Coast. Doctor, welcome back.
It's terrific to be here again.
I got to tell you, this is indeed one of the biggest perplexing questions that people ask themselves all the time. Does God really exist? Who are we? How do we get here? How did an astrophysicist get involved in this question?
Well, of course, as an astrophysicist, I'm used to thinking about big things. But anyway, this goes way back to my childhood. I mean, when I was not even in grade school yet, I knew I wanted to investigate the stars and the planets. They really intrigued me, but at the same time, I was sort of bound to become a priest as well. And so I went on to a course that would take me through a high school that prepared me for a seminary, and then went into the seminary for a year, actually, but dropped out and went into astrophysics after that. So it's always just been natural to me to try to look at the big things, and space is something I just always loved.
And you've made some conclusions, and we'll get to them at the end of this interview. And you have a co-author with you as well on this latest book, Proof of God?
That's right, Ptolemy Tompkins.
And when you, or have you, you've talked to atheists, I'm sure, right?
Talked to what, please?
Atheists.
Oh, yes, yeah, certainly, of course.
Are they convincing to you at all?
Well, no. I mean, I can understand why one would be an atheist, because there are lots and lots of things in the world today that if you wanted to blame God for them, you can make a pretty good case that the things are in a bad way.
Sure.
And you can get very upset at God for, you know, tolerating things like this. On the other hand, if you understand what this system is all about, the system of birth and death and coming back to another life, you see that holding God responsible for the things that happen doesn't really hold up, because there are all sorts of experiences we need to have in a physical reality. Sometimes they're not particularly pleasant. But there are things that, probably our soul needs to look at it from a larger point of view. And in the long run, we'll be evened out. So I don't think that what happens here and now right in front of us, you know, as terrible as it may seem sometimes, you know, has the implication that God is not there, because I think God has given us and given nature freedom. I mean, I think that the key thing here is free will. We have free will, and nature has free will to act as it will. And that free will can unfortunately sometimes result in things that just are very, very unpleasant.
Are most scientists, doctor, atheists, in your opinion, or agnostic?
Well, if you add together the agnostic and the believers, I guess you would say probably that's a little over 50%. As I follow the surveys up by the Pew Foundation, for example, I find that there's about half as many scientists believing in God as there are people at one time. And I think overall the public mood is like 80% believing in a God. So that would put scientists a little under half, which isn't really bad.
No, it's not bad at all. Now, Proof of God is different from your other couple books. Tell us the difference here.
Right. Well, it's a lot more personal of a story, and that came about because my collaborator, Ptolemy Tompkins, had some interesting things to say, and so we wrote a book together that talked about his experiences at the time when we were writing it. He was having some serious marital problems, and he really was looking at his life, you know, in the context of the greater, bigger things, and so we got together and put together this book that I think it's a very readable one. It's the kind of book you can pick up and look at in San Francisco, and by the time you land in Washington, you've got it read. So it's something that I think is very understandable. I have more details of the astrophysical aspect of this in my other two books, The God Theory and The Purpose-Guided Universe, and they're all available together at godtheory.com.
Tom Lee's been on the program before and, of course, worked closely with Dr. Eben Alexander on his best-selling book, Proof of Heaven. It changed his life as well, Doctor.
Yes, it certainly did, and I think that Proof of Heaven was an excellent book, and certainly makes the point that there is something else. There are other things out there. I mean, when Dr. Alexander spent almost five days in a complete coma, his mind was officially, or his thoughts, his brain, I should say, his brain was inactive. Yeah, and yet he had experiences that were quite amazing, as recounted in the book that that Tommy Tompkins wrote about him. So they're alone in that case. You've got lots and lots of evidence that there is something going on that is more than just what we've studied in terms of science in the physical world. And that kind of evidence is growing. And I think it's important that we take that seriously and try to come up with ways to investigate that aspect of reality. I think that we're missing an opportunity if we just dismiss this.
Is the proof of God more scientific or more spiritual?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not quite sure. I guess I would say it's fairly scientific, because I would say, just to summarize what I think are four important points of the proof, one being that the Big Bang itself is kind of a proof, because at the time that Einstein formulated his general theory of relativity, astronomers still thought that the universe was infinitely large and static. In fact, trying to make it infinitely large and static caused Einstein to put in this cosmological constant. It certainly turned out to be a problem later. So the universe is not static, and it's not infinite in extent. It's an expanding universe. And so I guess the first round of competition would go to the probably go to Genesis, because that implied a sort of chaotic beginning in time, and astronomers are still looking for static universes back in the early part of the 20th century. And then there are the amazing fine-tunings of the laws of nature that most all astronomers believe need to be explained. We can talk about those, and I hope we do talk about those in the course of the discussion. Or have some ideas now on how you might, I'll just say this bluntly, or have some ideas now on how do you make a universe. And we'll certainly talk about that. And then there is the fact that we actually have these experiences of people that we can look to as real empirical evidence that there's something else going on in other places that exist in this realm of reality than just the physical universe itself.
When you were starting your work on this, did you already conclude that God was real, or did you have to seek that out?
No, I think that probably when I left the seminary, I was sort of at my minimal point in believing in a God. I was young, I was 20 years old, 19 years old. And
you had your doubts.
Pardon me?
You had your doubts.
I had my doubts, that's right, and they were growing. I guess I would say that now, after thinking it over for a few more years beyond that, I'm probably more convinced than I was when I was much younger, especially because now as a scientist, I can look at the arguments pro and con, and you know I can tell when my colleagues are BSing me about the, I can tell when the scientific arguments are being used and not being used, and so what I hear from myself and from other people, it's convinced me that there's a God, and I'm just eager to share that, because I think the world needs a belief in something optimistic, something that will take us out of the dark ages that in some areas of the world we're in.
Why is it, if there is a God, Doctor, that so many horrendous things happen to all of us?
Well, I think this goes back to the free will again. Free will is the bugaboo. Now, of course, if we didn't have free will, it wouldn't be worth living, would it? I mean, it just wouldn't make any sense to be a living human being if nothing that I did was actually my own doing, but was something attributed to, fate or something totally different. And that free will that we have, though, unfortunately, lets us do things that sometimes go to the very extreme evil. And, there's sometimes no stopping it. And I think the no stopping it does not reflect the fact that God is impotent. It rather reflects the fact that God has said, ye shall have free will and do with it as you will, and sort of has stepped back. And unfortunately, we could use his presence sometimes, but I think in the grand scheme of things, there's a reason why he doesn't intervene, because it would take away our free will, and that's the all-important thing. But I think this is an experiment we're living in, and that experiment depends upon our acting in a free will fashion.
What if God cannot intervene? What if God really can't change events?
Well, if he really couldn't.
And that's a devil's advocate question.
I guess he would not be much of a God if that were the case. I mean,
I agree.
If he was incapable of doing it, I would have my issues with that.
So let's look at the four components of a proof of God, and we'll analyze each one. Let's start with the first one.
Right. The first one I already mentioned was that the Big Bang itself is sort of a a good one there. It's not really terribly powerful, but it does prove that the spiritual side, was going in the right direction. 100 years ago, when Einstein was working on his general theory of relativity, he put in a cosmological constant into his equation because he had to find a way to keep the universe stable, and you need that cosmological constant in the mathematics. So that, I would say, was a first shock to the astrophysical world when it was discovered that the universe is not infinite and static, it's expanding. So there's one element of a proof, right? But that's not the strongest one. The stronger ones are that there's an amazing fine-tuning of the laws of nature, and that fine-tuning is such that life evolves more readily than it would if the constants of nature were different. In fact, there are some values of the constants of nature that you could take that would make it impossible for a world to be come into being. So the fact that we have this fine-tuning of physical laws, that's a strong indication that, this universe is meant to be something that was lived in. And there is the observations of Dr. Ibn Alexander and, of course, thousands of others who had near-death experiences. And those experiences reveal that there's more out there than we've been taught. And then finally, there's how do you make the universe, which is the thing I alluded to earlier. And I think that there's a way to look at the nature of the universe is kind of radically different than we have thought of before, and that is to think of the universe as being a virtual universe rather than a real universe. And that's got some implications that are pretty good.
Some people think that Elon Musk, for example, that we're living in a digital world, a digital universe.
We are, but not in the terrible, horrible way that they conceive of it. So let me talk about that for a minute. It's considered respectable in the scientific world to say, well, maybe we should look at what would happen if we have supercomputers sometime in the future. What possible things can we do with that? And they've come to the conclusion that you could, perhaps download your own consciousness onto a computer, and maybe whole civilizations residing on a computer, with the fear that, what we really are, you and I and everybody else here, what we really are simply algorithms on a computer that are being carried out by some kid, in the far future is playing games, and we're nothing but a school project. So that kind of way of looking at the possible extrapolations of our computer capabilities is considered respectable in that area. Now, it would not be respectable, I think, to take the view that maybe God is the one behind this programming, and so instead of having electronics to fabricate human beings in reality, you have God's thoughts doing this. God is probably an infinite thing, and he could probably do the same thing with his thoughts as a computer could do with its electronics. So that opens the question of why should we not look at the universe as possibly being a physically virtual reality?
Sure.
And that would be a lot simpler than a real reality.
I can't wait till we take calls later, Doctor. They're going to come out like crazy.
Uh-huh.
Is God, in your opinion, emotional?
Well, I think what God is consciousness. I think that consciousness is everything that is. In fact, I would say there is nothing but consciousness. And I would say that God is the source of that. And what God, I think, does when we are created, so to speak, is that we have a piece of that consciousness embedded in us, and then we go out and take that consciousness, which is us, and live in a simulation. That is, the universe around us and all the laws of physics and the matter and all of that, a vast simulation. That's not so far-fetched, because if you look at how the game world has evolved over the last 20 years and extrapolate that by, factors of millions and billions, that starts to make sense that maybe God's made all this, but not really made it as a real thing, but as a virtual reality, and then, goes and plays in it and experiences it, and perhaps even, here's a radical idea, perhaps God even evolves himself through this playing of games, to learn what his real nature is by experiencing what it's like to live in a physical universe.
When I was younger, I would talk to my mother about God, about this. And her answer was, when I would say, Mom, what is God? Who is God? She would always say, Doctor, that God always was and always will be. And I went, but that doesn't explain to me how it started.
Right.
Or he started, as we used to say then. And so I will pose the same question to you. If there's a God, how did it start?
Right. That is a very tough question, because it's going to probably require us to have an understanding of things that we simply don't have the mental capacity to do. Yeah, we could run the Big Bang back in time. If we had the whole Big Bang, you know, on a tape, we could run the tape backwards and wind up having the universe shrink to a point. Okay, and that's the Big Bang. And we could say, well, time began at that point, space began at that point. And that makes sense then if you run the universe forward again with space and time being created at the Big Bang. But that leaves the question of what happened before the Big Bang. How did it happen? How did it know that it was supposed to happen? If there's no time around, then you don't know whether it's time to do something because there's no time. So it's impossible to take our form of time and run it backwards below the T equals zero level of the Big Bang because it just doesn't make any sense. The same thing would apply, I suppose, to the spiritual perspective, but there we have the infinite God that can sit back and do this. I mean, that's what the scripture tells us anyway, that God is infinite, and somehow, in whatever way, you know, things work on that end, within that realm, I think it's God's intentions that create a Big Bang, and perhaps many other kind of other Big Bangs for other universes that could exist. And I wrestle with this all the time because I would like to understand how in time things work, but you can't have anything developing when there's no time. So we're kind of stuck here. But on the other hand, science is no better off than spirituality is in terms of understanding that, because there too you can't have something take place without a cause. And that cause, I don't think, is a quantum fluctuation. I mean, that's oftentimes said, that quantum fluctuations have caused this, but without any kind of laws whatsoever, I don't think you can have even a fluctuation. So no fluctuations, no universe.
Doctor, if there is no God, if there is no God, how does that explain, then, how everything started, how life started, the complexity? Everything's so organized. Everything happened for a reason. I mean, we have water, we have air. I mean, it's just uncanny how it all works if there's no God.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, that was one of my arguments that I made for why we should have a trust in the fact that there is a God, because it does seem very much like this has been tailor-made for life to evolve. Now, let me say that I'm all for evolution. I have nothing against evolution. In fact, I would say evolution is a great way to make new, novel things happen in a world, which I think is the motive, the reason God did it in the first place.
Sure.
To create an environment where new things can arise that are sort of out of his control, because he wants, I think, to experience what can happen just by application of his abilities, not his past. So I think that that evolution is certainly a key element in this. But if you can somehow merge evolution with a sense of purpose in a larger sense, then I think we're onto something. I think that evolution operating in this environment and the time operating to let evolution take place, and the just the right constant of nature having been put into the universe at the outset by a God who is pretty smart, that would do it. And so I'm very much in agreement with you.
If there are multiverses, are there other gods or just one?
Wow. Now you're asking deep questions. I mean, I really don't know.
I've been ready for this.
Yeah,
tonight.
But I suspect not. I mean, I think that if there's one God who's immortal and infinite and infinite, in some fashion, I don't think you need any other gods. But who am I to say? Who am I to say?
If you talk to a theologian, Doctor, they'll give you a different perspective, a different kind of view from your perception and from a lot of other people's perceptions too. Are they at odds with your theories?
Well, I guess they would be, because the current theories are that there's a— well, a key element in current theories, of course, is heaven, heaven and hell. Those are things people talk about all the time. Now, if consider heaven for a minute. If you had to go someplace, if you were going someplace that was really fantastic, like, you know, at Disneyland or something like that, it'd be fun at first to do that. But by and by, it would get very, very tedious. Now, if this went on forever, I mean, think of what forever means. Forever means the same thing is going to happen again sometime in the future. Because everything happens.
Over and over again. Stay with us for a second, Doc. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about proof of God in our final hour. You got it. We'll flip the switch and take your calls. But we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back in the next hour again. We will take your phone calls with Dr. Bernard Heisch as we talk about his work, Proof of God. How'd you come up with the title, Doctor?
Well, we wanted to, of course, have something out there that sells books. So that was very much in keeping with what the publisher liked. We had a couple of proof of books already in publication. So, you know, I was aware of the fact that we were taking a bit of a risk doing that because, you know, if someone was expecting a very formal, logical kind of proof, a sort of a, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas kind of thing, they might be disappointed. But I think that, you know, I think it is okay. It's legitimate and it's fair to call arguments of the sort I've made, when you put them all together, proof. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody's going to be convinced, because there are diehards that, you know, say, I would not believe in God if he zapped me with a lightning bolt. So it's not possible to convince everybody, and I think, though, that our title was a little bit on the racy side, but still I think it was fair to call it that, because it's, you know, there's these strong arguments that God does exist, and it's, I'm happy to be talking about them.
Does prayer go to a God, go to God to get things done and accomplished, or is it the individual who manifests something themselves?
Well, I think it's the individual, because I think what happens is that God, this vast, immortal, all-encompassing consciousness, takes bits of himself, like little flames off of the bonfire, and lets them enter into the physical world, or physical worlds, if there are other universes, other planets. And so if you pray, you might as well pray inside, because that's where God is. I mean, you're sort of, in a sense, praying to yourself, because you are God. But, of course, as we live here in this environment, we don't really act God-like in the conventional sense. You know, so we realize that, but still, the point is that God is not out there somewhere trying to be reached. He's really deep inside yourself, and so that's where to look.
So when people say, I got to pray to God, it's not going out into that ether?
Well, it may be going into ether, but more importantly, I think it goes into the individual. I mean, I'm not an expert on prayer, so I don't really know its functionality entirely, but you know, the point is just that you're not praying to some entity somewhere else. That entity is within you.
How do you explain
the Gospels? Probably, but Gospels and epistles probably say that sort of thing too.
How do you explain God when a young child dies of like cancer? How does that happen?
Well, that's a tough one to explain to the child. I mean, I would say
and to the parents.
And the parents. Well, as I said earlier, the free will is the key element in all of this. Free will. Because without free will, we don't have anything really, and the idea that God wants some novel things to arise, some productive things that hadn't been planned, arise out of His, you know, creation, I think causes Him to make a creation for us and for Himself that is unfettered by, that can unfortunately lead to things that are unpleasant, because it's the free will that's the key thing, and you take that away to make things more pleasant, you've probably ruined the whole experiment.
Well, that's possible. It's perplexing, though, because you would think that if there is a God that is benevolent, these things can't happen.
But if these things happen, are a tool for your own growth, your own soul's growth, you know, maybe that's something you wish for yourself. I don't want to explain away all evil in that kind of glib way. I don't want to be glib about this, because I certainly don't know the answers, but I have this strong suspicion that it's the way to keep free will there, to, you know, and we volunteer to come into this reality, presumably we have, and I'm assuming we have, and so we kind of accept the risks that are involved in that, but in a sense we can rest assured that in the long run, you know, things will be okay. I mean, I think we ourselves are like God Himself, infinite and immortal beings, and so, you know, there will be justice coming, and there will be, you know, something better coming, even though things may look as bleak as possible right now.
Doctor, can God stop an asteroid from hitting the planet? Can God step in and divert it?
Well, I suppose you could. I mean,
or did He send it?
Pardon me?
Or did He send the asteroid?
I don't know. I would strongly argue He did not send it, because that would be, you know, an interference from the outside, and that would contradict the idea that free will is the point of all this. Could He stop one? Yeah, I suppose, of course He could if He's infinite in God. But I don't think He would, because, you know, that's just sort of the part of the world that was created, you know, when it was created, caused things to occur in a certain fashion. And those may lead to, at the moment, to things that seem, you know, cosmically unpleasant. But I think that they all have a purpose. And, of course, I myself would probably feel very upset if something terrible happened to me right now. But, you know, being philosophical about it, I would say, well, it's probably something that, you know, I either brought upon myself, or it's something I wanted to experience, or my soul's growth or something positive.
Genesis in the Bible, of course, will talk about a very angry God that sends a flood that kills out the population. Yeah. How do you explain that?
Well, I that's what I think the Bible is well, I don't know how to properly phrase this. I don't believe that kind of being is the God that I'm talking about. A God that would do that is not anybody I would possibly pray for or pray to, or worship. I mean, that's just awful stuff. And I'm aware of the books that some of the atheists have written that point this out, especially the one who talked about the letters to a Christian nation. Can't think of the name right now, but he has listed in his book a number of examples in the Old Testament that talk about exactly this sort of thing, where God orders, you know, his people to go slaughter the men and women of the invading of the
town of the Egyptians.
And Sam Harris is the name. And I've got to agree with Harris. Harris is right. You know, that kind of God is a monster. And I would not, you know, be pleased with him or obey him. But I think that's because what we're reading is mythology, at least in those stories. I think the New Testament is different. But in the Old Bible, I think we're reading things that, were made up by, were made up.
So you don't believe that kind of God exists?
No, I don't. I don't believe he could, because I think that kind of God would be too small a thing to be a God.
How do we explain Jesus talking about being the Son of God?
Well, I think that it's quite possible. I mean, I'm sort of an independent Christian, so I'm very open to that. And I think that probably Jesus was at a minimum, a very exalted being. Since I believe that we all are sparks of God, it's not so unusual to assume that someone like Jesus came and was also a spark of God, but one hell of a spark, you know. Perhaps he was the closest to an embodiment of God in a human form, than more so than anyone else, and I could accept that. So I have no problem with a Jesus, though I'm just not sure whether he was, you know, simply someone who was an example of being very, very close to God, more closer than we can be, if it came to earth, or whether he was, you know, God in some larger sense. I don't think he can be God as God, because it's hard to pack Godhood into something as small as a human body. It'd be sort of like trying to, you know, make humanhood appear in an ant or an amoeba. You can't do it. There's not enough to work with.
Well, with Dr. Bernard Heisch, his book, Proof of God, you have talked a little bit about, zero-point field and how this is related somewhat. Explain that for us.
Well, now the zero-point field, that's a whole other topic, because that involves some physics I was involved with about 20 years ago. We thought at the time, this is my work with Alfonso Rueda, a professor at Cal State Long Beach, a brilliant guy, really whose ideas, pretty much, I mean, they're his ideas that we were writing about. We found that it was possible to account for the mass of matter using the zero-point field as something that interacts with matter and gives it a mass. And that was really a cool idea, and I still think it's pretty neat. But in the meantime, the physics world has discovered the Higgs field. And so the Higgs field is the particle that's supposed to give mass to matter. And so we're kind of putting our work on the back burner until it becomes more clear whether the Higgs field will really pan out as the physicists expect, or whether there'll still be need for something else. And there's something else we have in hand. It's a pretty good theory that with some development, I think, could be, could lead to some interesting consequences, like possibly gravity control or inertia control. That's the most extrapolating as far as possible from what we did. You know, things like that might be possible in the future, but for the moment we have it on the back burner because we need to see how the Higgs particle works out.
Like, of course, the universe, God was always here, always will be. How can that be?
Pardon me, I missed it. What was the question again?
How can God always be? How does that happen?
Well, that's the same question we discussed earlier about what happens before time.
Yeah, but what is before time?
I really have no idea how you have time before time. I can only guess that there's something else, some other thing that is sort of like a time, but is not quite a time, is different. And maybe it's a multidimensional time, I don't know. But or maybe, you know, this is simply a question that can't be answered because it involves the innate properties of God, the God, the great consciousness. But you know, that is all there is, and we just perhaps have to assume or accept the fact that it's not everything we can comprehend.
So I was going to say, so it's safe to assume that even scientists like yourself don't have that answer.
Oh, nobody's got that one. I mean, that's a toughie. I know nobody that has a good answer to how there can be time without time, which is kind of what you need to have, you know, a causation for the Big Bang, because that causation has to precede it. Well, how can you have anything precede? And you have no way of distinguishing what's here from what's happening, you know, 2 seconds from now. So it's a real logical conundrum.
Are you saying that there is a God because we can't explain these other possibilities?
In part, I am, yeah. I mean, I realize that the explanations they're offering here, you know, they're good ones. I mean, I really believe in them, that they're very strong.
I mean, it's easy to say, God did it.
Yeah, right.
We don't have to think about answers. God did it.
Yes, that's right. But I think really what's happening is our will did it. Our free will did it. That's the key thing is free will.
Will we really, Doctor, ever get the answers that we're looking for?
I think that, you know, some of the answers we have inside already, but they're not supposed to be revealed to us, because once everything is revealed, the whole game, the whole system kind of loses its capability, its potency. If I knew exactly what the universe was about and God was about and what I really was and other lives I may have lived, I mean, that would pretty much stop the development of my present life, because I'd be so fascinated by all of that, I'd devote all my energy to it somehow. So I think not knowing all these things is part of the whole process. It's part of the game. It's part of the experience. It's part of the free will enacting itself. It's just a necessary part of it, which is frustrating. You know, I'd like to know all these things. On the other hand, if I knew them all, well, it might make life kind of boring.
Well, even if extraterrestrials came here and said, we came from another universe, and, you know, we helped create the God here, and it jump-started where you are, that doesn't explain how his God started.
Indeed. I mean, there may be hierarchies of worlds. This is interesting that in modern physics, the concept of many different dimensions, different than ours, is part of the mathematics mm-hmm. that's being developed. It's part of brain theory and string theory. You have other dimensions. And people would have laughed at that 40 or 50 years ago if that had been mentioned in a spiritual context. But, you know, the idea that there are these other universes certainly opens the possibility to there being interactions between these worlds and the beings within them. And that takes us back essentially to the biblical and other religious traditions to talk about other worlds and other beings and angels and so on. I think that, you know, we shouldn't just laugh that off. It's probably, you know, those are probably manifestations of additional worlds that this God has created.
Well, it's an amazing thing, and it's perplexing to be sure. Has it kept you up at night?
I think it has. Yeah, I think I've spent a lot of sleepless nights worrying about this sort of thing. Not worrying about it, but thinking about it.
If you had an opportunity to talk with God, what would you ask him?
Well, a million questions.
But you only get one.
Only get one, yeah. I thought you might come up with something like that. I guess I might say, what is this all about?
And I would ask him, how did you get here? How did you get created?
Yeah.
Maybe we're looking at it differently, Doctor. Maybe creation and what we think is life, maybe none of it makes sense. Maybe there are no answers to any of this.
Well, that, of course, is the nihilistic view you can't take. I mean, there it's possible to believe that there's all just nothing, that this is just a giant charade.
It's like a dream.
A dream or a farce, or a farcical dream. And that's, you know, I can't deny that that's a possibility. I think it's remote. To me, it's remote as something I would believe.
I mean, you know why I think that's not the case? We do feel pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do suffer. And, you know, we do horrendous things on this planet. I mean, I still can't get over the way we continue to kill each other.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling to me. With all that, this is real. This is not made up. This is not make-believe. It's here.
Yes.
Now, and again, though, when you talk about it, let's talk about free will one more time. When you talk about free will, are you saying we have the will to do what we need to do?
Yes, that's right. I think it gives us the freedom to do whatever we want to do, whatever we're capable of doing, we can do. On the other hand, that brings consequences. You don't just do whatever you want to do and get away with it. I think there is such a thing as karma. And the things you do in one life, you might have to make up for in another. And I think that, you know, the with the free will comes responsibility and the association with, or rather the responsibility for the consequences of your actions.
So with these consequences, you're convinced that there is reincarnation, life after death, all that is real.
I think it is real, yeah. I really do think it is.
What if the gods, at least on this planet, were extraterrestrials that came here, seeded us, as some have said, and created us? Possible?
Well, I suppose it's possible. I mean, maybe they had a subcontract from God, you know, to carry out these operations, with them being the prime contractors. I think it's not totally out of the question that the creation of our particular universe and ourselves within it and so on, you know, involved the activities of other entities. You know, they're not God himself. I mean, I'm just really guessing. This is really far-fetched now, you know, what we're discussing. But it doesn't seem impossible to me that they're intermediaries. You know, that's why I said part-time. That's why I said subcontractors. I've seen books about this sort of thing, the suggestions that that's the case. But I don't know what to say about it beyond that, except to say that I would not totally rule it out.
Well, with Dr. Bernard Heisch's book is called Proof of God. Where do you get the book, Doctor?
Well, you can get it on Amazon or most any bookstores published by Simon & Schuster.
Was it fun or frustrating to put together?
It was fun. I mean, there's always some frustration knowing that we don't know the answers, but overall it was fun, and I enjoyed interacting with Ptolemy. He was a great guy and a great writer, and I hope to write some more with him.
What do some of your colleagues say? I mean, do they say, Bernie, what are you saying? I mean, ever do that?
I just retired recently, and so I don't have to worry about that.
Aha! Uh-huh.
I can say what I want to say now. And I think, you know, I enjoyed saying things that I think are important for society. I mean, I think if more people believed this scenario I presented, I think it would certainly make them think about the consequences of their actions more. And then you might have some of these actions not taking place.
That could happen. We're going to come back in a moment. Final hour to go. We will take your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.